Come on, then.
Knights and knaves, from Camelot to Concord.
All right, we'll call it a draw.
Welcome to the Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game.
On the right wing, in and out dribble, between the legs, off her step, wide open, left wing, three, Gucci!
Behold, King Kevin Danner.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, I'm very nice.
And the Saint, Gary St. Jean.
What up, what up, what up? We welcome you to Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game. Kevin Dana, hopefully alongside shortly with Gary St. James, still trying to get him to connect, and we'll get him on as soon as we can. I'll be rocking with you for the time being, and of course, later on the show, we'll be giving you a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Warriors game when we will take the seventh caller at 415-523-4652 later on in the show. If you want to talk Dubs with Saint Nye, that's 888-957-9570. Anything you want to talk about Warriors-wise, NBA Cup-wise, basketball-wise, whatever else, hit us up. We're happy to talk with you for the next 55 minutes or so. So, the Warriors, they had the five-game losing skid going last time we were on the air, and they've won two of three since, a bit of a stabilizing stretch, of course. Still not quite playing at the level they were when they started the season 12-3, currently 14-9. Let's start with the win over Minnesota on Sunday and the play of Buddy Buckets, Buddy Hield. This guy was mired in a big-time slump. Going into his previous 10 games going into Sunday, he was shooting 36% from the field and was 5 of his last 18 from deep. I think that was over his previous four games. But he broke out in a big way with 27 points. And sometimes, and this is something he talked about before the game, or after the game, I should say, is that just need a little runway to get the legs pumping, get the blood flowing out there. You know, Buddy started, and Steve Kerr after the game said that they needed to get Buddy going, and he certainly showed up in a big way. And he didn't show up in the first quarter. It came as the game went on. He needed to get a couple of misses out of him, and he ended up going 7 of 13 from downtown. Now the Warriors are 7-0 when Buddy Hield scores 20-plus points. That's a huge number, and it's something you'd like to see more of because to start the season, the guy was on fire. He was averaging more than 20 points per game through the first couple of weeks of the season, but this was his first 20-point game in more than a month since November the 4th. And so, look, the starting lineup, it was their 13th different starting lineup, and we'll get into kind of the machinations of that as the hour goes on, but it was the 13th different starting lineup, and I imagine there will not be only 13 different starting lineups this season. There are going to be more lineup changes. Buddy has been so great off the bench, or was so great to start the season off the bench. You see what he can do as a starter. He had some games as a starter this year where it wasn't quite working, but interesting to see kind of what his role is going to be in these next few games. If they like him so much, coming in the game as a starter, considering what happened on Sunday, but really a big game for Buddy Hield on Sunday. It was great to see him break out of that slump, hit some big shots, including the dagger three to give Golden State a 6-point lead with in the final minute of that eventual 114-106 win. Another big development over the weekend, over the course of the two games, was Jonathan Kuminga getting inserted into the starting lineup over Draymond Green for Friday. Of course, both he and Draymond started the game on Sunday because of some more lineup switches. But I wanted to read this from Draymond Green to get his perspective on this. And so this is what he told Anthony Slater in the press after the game. He said, "A lot of people in this organization, including myself, think he's next. So if he's next, at some point, we got to see it. For him to do that, he needs the opportunity. If the opportunity falls on you, being me, then that's what it is. You got to figure it out. He's earned the right to get that opportunity." Later, kind of alluded to David Lee taking a back seat to Draymond Green when David Lee got injured in that first championship season. And I thought it was a very mature point from Draymond Green. And Jonathan Kuminga did kind of force Golden State's hand with his 33-point performance against the Houston Rockets kind of saved that game in crunch time. And people are considering now kind of the start of the Jonathan Kuminga era with the trade deadline 2 months away. You kind of have this runway, this 2 month runway to see what Jonathan Kuminga can do. Is he the guy that he was drafted to be, or when he was drafted seventh overall with all those expectations to potentially be the man for this organization, but in future years? And so we're going to see that the future is here, perhaps, for Jonathan Kuminga. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens there with JK. He followed up that 33-point game. Didn't have a great game on Friday in the loss. Well, nobody had a great game, really, for Golden State in that loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves. He had 13 in that game. Then he bounced back in a big way on Sunday. 20 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and 3 blocks. So had a really nice game, and he played 36 minutes. And I was just reading some stats. When he gets to 30-plus minutes per game, over his career, he's averaging 20 points per game. Now, obviously, you play more, you're going to get more opportunity to score the basketball. But when it's I forget what the minute restriction was. This was in a Shams Charani article for ESPN. That number dips to like 10.5 points per game. It's something in like the 20s or below, something like that. Again, of course, you play more minutes, you're going to score more. But that's something that certainly kind of caught my eye, and certainly a big development over the weekend is people are kind of calling this the start of the Jonathan Kuminga era. So 20 points for him on Sunday, certainly a big moment for him getting the starting nod over Draymond Green in Friday's loss. But that was good to see for the Golden State Warriors and for Jonathan Kuminga personally, who's got his average up to 15 points per game. It was a rough start to the season for him. He was kind of hovering around 10, 11 points per game the first couple of weeks. That steadily rose. Of course, he got to 16 points per game last year. He's got 59 games to try to surpass that average. Well, moving on to other players who had big games, how about Gary Payton II in his fourth quarter defense against Anthony Edwards? Ant-Man was cooking on Sunday through the first three quarters. He had 9 of his first 12 shots. He had 24 points. Came back into the game in the fourth quarter, about 9.5 minutes to go. And then Gary Payton II essentially cut off the head of the snake as he forced Anthony Edwards into 1 of 7 shooting. A couple of late turnovers. GP2 able to get out in transition. As a result, Minnesota only scored 16 points in that fourth quarter. And here's what Steve Kerr had to say about how Gary Payton II was going about defending Anthony Edwards.
Just to make things hard. I mean, Ant is an incredible player, and late third, he just had it rolling. And so at that point, it's just put your best defender on him, and you don't really want to send a double team because you got other guys who are knocking down shots. Alexander Walker was hot, so we just wanted Gary to play him straight up, give him some help, in the gaps, try to make things a little crowded without double teaming. And Gary and the guys behind him did a great job of that.
And you're listening to Warriors Roundtable here on 95.7 The Game. Kevin Dana, no Gary St. Jean yet. We're still working on getting the Saint with you. The saintly one will hopefully be joining us shortly. But here's the thing I've always liked about GP2, and I've watched a lot of GP2 over the last 7-plus years, ever since even going back to his Oregon State days, watching him a decent bit with the Beavers. But man, especially when he came to the G League, you could really see it at the professional level, just the force he plays with on defense and how well he kind of fits within the system on offense. Clint Ozebuki calls him the little big man, right? Because where can you find him, as Bob Fitzgerald asked? Around the basket. And what he's able to do kind of sitting in that dunker spot on offense. But, of course, his defense was the name of the game. But he's not a total zero on offense either. I want to make that point. Even though he has not been shooting the three well this year, in previous years he was a really good corner three shooter for Golden State. The shot hasn't been going down for GP2 this year. I mean, he's only 16% from three, 4 of 25. Still a small sample size, but not what we're used to seeing from Gary. You expect him to kind of live in the low 30s, not in the teens. So I think that number will go up. But inside and around the basket, he's been really good this year. I'm doing the math in my head, 45 of 64 on twos. That's better than 70%. So around the rim, he's good, and he's a really good floor spacer. And the reason why they started him, and this comes back to the 13th different starting lineup, and this was his third start of the season, is because he plays so well with Stephen Curry. Such a good pairing with Steph. Those two play so well off each other, running pick and rolls and that kind of thing. So the defensive impact was great, but he also really kind of fits in well offensively with what they're doing. There was an article that Slater wrote on Sunday after their win about how Pabeil Sadu and the analytics team kind of suggested this idea, this starting five that they ended up running against the Minnesota Timberwolves in the back end of that baseball series, that two-game set. You know, the starting five was GP2, Steph, Buddy, Draymond, and Jonathan Kuminga, and they were overall a plus 11 in 17 minutes. Now, it didn't start great. They were down 30-21 after one quarter, but as the game wore on, that lineup really started to bear fruit. And look, the bench rotations had to get kind of mixed up a little bit because Moses Moody couldn't play in the second half because he was hurt, and he's actually not going to be playing on Wednesday as well against the Houston Rockets. But look, that starting five, it did its job. I'd be curious to see how much more they use that starting five going forward. Well, we're coming up on a break, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to dive in more to these Minnesota games over the weekend. We'll take a look to the NBA Cup, and we're taking your calls, and we're giving away a pair of tickets on the other side of this timeout, right here on 95.7 The Game.
Sir Kevin and Sir Gary welcome you back to the Warriors Roundtable.
Launches a three. Gucci!
On the valiant 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back to Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game. Kevin Dana kicking it with you for the next 41 minutes or so, and hopefully be joined by Gary St. Jean soon. But folks, it's time to give away those tickets to an upcoming Warriors game. Call the contest line at 415-523-4652, and if you are caller number 7, you will get a pair of tickets to an upcoming Warriors game. We'll announce the winner later on in the show, and we will be doing this all year long for our Warriors Roundtable ticket giveaway. So the contest line, 415-523-4652. If you want to get on the air with us, 888-957-9570. I guarantee you, you call on the show, we get you on. You're going to be the smartest person on the air because I am a basketball simpleton. Don't confuse my abilities or my so-called abilities to call a basketball game with actual basketball knowledge. I wouldn't dare do that. But we would definitely love to hear from you here, and you would make this show more intelligent. 888-957-9570. So I want to go back to the GP2 and Steph pairing, because Stephen Curry was asked about his on-court chemistry with Gary Payton II, something that's been developing over the years. And this is what Steph had to say after the game about his on-court chemistry with GP2.
We developed that since years, the 2021 season, where he's such a unique player because he can guard on the ball. He puts so much pressure as a point of attack defender. And he also just has a strong IQ for where to be on offense. He gets to his spots quickly. We run a lot of pick and roll with me and him at times where he's, you know, rolling in the pocket, getting downhill. He knows how to move the ball quick, set great screens, just make the next play. So he has a great feel, and he's shown that the whole time he's been here, the two different stints. And, you know, he's a big part of our championship year, especially that start that we had that gave us some great momentum. He just has a way to figure it out. And the last, whatever, 5 minutes of tonight, he played well all game, but that last 5 minutes, just trying to give Anthony Edwards as much hell as possible, that's who he is.
There's a couple things there from Steph on GP2 that I want to follow up on. First, the point of attack defense, which is something that the Warriors have needed more of in recent years, especially you think about last year, and their point of attack defense was a big reason why they were the 10 seed in the Western Conference and lost in big-time fashion to the Sacramento Kings in the playing game, in the 9-10 playing game. GP2, of course, he was on the roster last year. He was dealing with some injuries. Last year wasn't fully himself, wasn't available for the full 82. And look, he's been more healthy this year. He has been available. He's played in every game this year, which certainly helps. He's played all 23. He's started three. And that point of attack defense is some, especially against a team like Minnesota, and handling a guy like Anthony Edwards. He does that against Anthony Edwards. He's going to be able to do something like that against most top-tier guys, especially when Andrew Wiggins isn't available. And you know, hopefully this Andrew Wiggins injury isn't going to be something that lingers along too long. But when you don't have Andrew Wiggins available, he's basically your perimeter stopper. And so Andrew, by the way, he's listed as questionable for the Rockets game tomorrow night. Anthony Slater reporting that about an hour ago. But that's one thing about GP2. The other thing is his ability to move the basketball quickly that Steph talked about. That 0.5 basketball that you'll hear, you know, Steve Kerr and other coaches talk about. And maybe it took a little more of a backseat in the second half against Minnesota. Go a little more pick and roll, a little more iso ball. And maybe not the quite the right term to use there, but Golden State wants guys who can make quick decisions with the basketball, either dribble, pass, or shoot within a half second. And as he's talking about, as Steph is talking about GP2 rolling the pocket, how many times you see him like on the short roll, he gets it, and within a split second, he's moving that thing into the corner for a wide open three or something like that. So he might not be a big-time scorer, but he's still very valuable to Golden State's offense. And I thought Steph made a couple of really good points there. It'll be interesting to see, though, when Andrew Wiggins is available to come back, what they do with this starting lineup. I do not have the answers, that's for sure. But I think, obviously, you do want to start Andrew Wiggins. He has been playing very well this year. He becomes your premier go-to kind of wing stopper, and you still have GP2 there. I think GP2 is a guy who's great in spot starts and certainly a key cog of this rotation. I do think you probably slide Andrew Wiggins. Does that mean that the starting lineup becomes Wiggins, Kuminga, Draymond, Buddy, and Steph? I don't know if they're going to do that. Like, I imagine Kevon Looney has some more starts coming out. They've gone away from Trayce Jackson-Davis right now. He did not play on Sunday, but he's not going to keep on getting DNPs. Steve Kerr will kind of, you know, with different guys, eventually he'll return to them after kind of going away from them for a couple of times. Of course, the game was punctuated on Sunday by Draymond Green's dunk and following night-night, the longest-held night-night I think we've seen. He ran down the court to catch up to Rudy Gobert, his favorite player in the NBA, to make sure that Rudy saw the four-time Defensive Player of the Year. This was what Steph had to say when he was asked about Draymond's night-night.
I saw it at the very end of it. I didn't know he did it all the way down the court. Let's just say his is a little bit more aggressive than mine. And I like it. I like it. You know, you make it your own.
It was certainly aggressive night-night. It's about as aggressive as a night-night can get. And I thought Marcus Thompson had a really good article kind of on what, maybe not the night-night itself meant, but how that dunk, it put Minnesota to sleep, and B, kind of woke Golden State up. As they were kind of teetering on potentially looking at their seventh loss in eight games going into this NBA Cup quarterfinal. It was a much-needed win. Keeps you five games above 500, 14-19. You feel a little better about things going into this in-season tournament. That's last year's parlance on this thing. But going into the NBA Cup quarterfinal matchup against Houston, another big thing from the game on Sunday that was huge, and it's something that we talk about all the time, are the turnovers. Of course, on Friday, when they lost 107-90, they were booting the ball all over the place. 22 giveaways, and just a lot of head-scratching ones, which unfortunately is nothing new for Golden State. There are always a few head-scratching turnovers in a Golden State Warriors game. But they only had 13 turnovers on Sunday. And Steve Kerr was asked about that, and he said, "We finally settled down and hit singles on Sunday. Threw the ball to the first open guy, ran the floor, and the game got really easy offensively, especially in transition. And this is something that Steve has been preaching for the last couple of years, kind of in the back end years of the dynasty, if you will, now that Steph isn't 30, Draymond isn't 28, Klay Thompson's obviously no longer here, no Kevin Durant, that you can't just kind of fling the ball all over the place and live with five turnovers that are just kind of mind-numbing. You don't have the talent to overcome those kind of mistakes and still beat a team by 15 points. That's not where the Warriors are anymore. I do wonder how sustainable Sunday's performance is. Maybe not that, I'm not saying they're going to turn it over 22 times a game every game. They've done a better job of taking care of the basketball this year, kind of with respect to the rest of the NBA. They've kind of been middle of the pack in turnovers for a decent bit of the season. Just checking up where they are right now in that turnover department. And yeah, like right now, they are 12th in turnovers per game. So that's really good. I will live with that. So they've been doing a better job of taking care of the basketball, but there are still games where they do turn over a lot. They're at 14.4 right now, and if they're 15 or under, no problems here. But it also depends on the kind of turnovers they're making. If they're trying to throw, you know, one-handed lobs over shoulders like we've seen both Pajemski and Steph do, and they get picked off and it leads to a layup the other way. The live ball turnovers have killed this team at times. And so I am curious, how possible is it for the Warriors to play more like they did on Sunday than they did on Friday with respect to not trying to make the spectacular play, because they've been trying to make the spectacular play for so long. I'm not sure how simple of a fix it really is. And so that's something that I kind of am curious about, because Steve's absolutely right. You have to hit singles. You can't keep on going for the home run. And you see, if you make the simple play, and if you keep on making the simple play, that it's going to be there for this team. But, you know, it's just something that is kind of plagued this Warriors team basically this whole era, is that they will have some careless turnovers, and they didn't have many on Sunday's game against Minnesota. You're listening to Warriors Roundtable here on 95.7 The Game. I want to give a shout out to Howard in San Francisco. He is our tickets winner. He has won tickets to a pair of tickets to an upcoming Warriors game. Again, we will be doing our Warriors Roundtable ticket giveaway every week we are on the air from here on out through the rest of the season. So with that win, the Warriors are 14-9, 23 games into the season, past the quarter pole, and coming up on tomorrow night, they got a big one against the Houston Rockets. And we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about that NBA Cup quarterfinal game. We're going to kind of break down the bracket. There is a tight one going on in Milwaukee right now between the depleted Orlando Magic and the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll break down the bracket, and we'll take your calls on the other side of this break right here on 95.7 The Game.
We've tended to our wounds.
Just a flesh wound.
Look, stop that!
Chicken!
What are you going to do, bleed on me?
Now back to the Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back to Warriors Roundtable here on 95.7 The Game. Kevin Dana rocking with you on a Tuesday evening. We're taking your calls, 888-957-9570. Come on, make this show better. Again, the number 888-957-9570. Talking Dubs, talking NBA Cup quarterfinals. By the way, the Milwaukee Bucks and Orlando Magic are playing right now. I got TNT on in my apartamento, and it's a one-point game with 10 seconds to go. The Bucks are up one over the Magic in the Doc Rivers Bowl here with 10 seconds to go. I'm trying to say, it's Milwaukee basketball. And Milwaukee Bucks have been playing some really good ball as of late. They started the season like 2-8. They've won 10 of their last 13, something around that. And Giannis has 35 points in this game. Damian Lillard's got 25. Bobby Portis, 22 and 10 off the bench. Chris Middleton is playing. Now, he hasn't scored, but he does have 8 assists and 3 steals. I think we're going to get into kind of my Eastern Conference predictions of the NBA Cup in a little bit. But this Milwaukee team, they're starting to really turn their season around. They've done more than that recently, and they are very close to punching a ticket to Las Vegas. But the Warriors are in the NBA Cup quarters for the first time, narrowly missing out last year. I mean, who could forget their 24-point halftime lead against the Sacramento Kings last year and then lost the game? And they needed to win by, I think it was like, they needed to win by like 11 points or something like that to get into the quarterfinals, because point differential is a determining factor to get into the Final Four. And a quick aside, since I mentioned point differential, everyone's talking about how point differential is confusing. No, it's not. It's really the most simple thing. Points for minus points against in the NBA Cup games. It's not that hard. We see, I mean, and I guess we don't see it in America a lot. That doesn't mean it's not simple. Like, they've been doing this in European soccer for decades. And I feel like the way it's kind of being presented to fans, I don't think it gives the fans enough credit for being able to do addition and subtraction in their heads. Like, all right, oh, a team's shooting the ball with the shot clock off, up 12. Yeah, they need to because of point differential. It's a little different. I like it. In the LNB Pro A, in EuroLeague, in these European professional leagues that I follow loosely, in LNB Pro A, the French Pro League, I follow a lot more than loosely, the point differential is a factor if teams have split a season series. And so you see teams kind of more frequently, not all the time, but, you know, shoot with the shot clock off, up big in situations. But so going back to last year, the Warriors need to win by 11 against Sacramento, and it felt like they were that was more important than winning the game. And it kind of dictated how they played. And instead of winning the game, the Warriors ended up losing because they kind of got rushed in some late game situations where they had the lead that they wouldn't have tried to rush as much if they didn't need to think about point differential. But anyways, so they're in the Cup quarters this year. They won their first three games. They clinched the group with a game to go, and very nearly went 4-0. Probably should have gone 4-0. Lost that game to Denver this time last Tuesday. But the Warriors have defeated the Houston Rockets 15 straight times. Now, all records are meant to be broken, as the Orlando Magic just missed a game tying three, and the Milwaukee Bucks, 5 seconds to go. I thought the clock had hit zero, but it looks like Milwaukee's heading off to the semifinals. But at some point, the Rockets are going to beat the Warriors, and it's going to be soon. It might not be, and hopefully it's not tomorrow, but this Rockets team is too good to keep on losing to Golden State. But lose they did to the Warriors on Thursday, a 99-93 game that would have been high scoring in 1999, but is one of the lower scoring games you'll see in an NBA arena these days. Very rare is it that both teams are held under 100, but the Warriors limited the Rockets to 38% shooting this game. No one really got off Jalen Green. He can either hit you for 30 or he can hit you with a 4-for-16. He's a roller coaster ride on offense, and look, he's their leading scorer on the season. He went 4-of-16 against Golden State. Now, did have 4 steals, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, but 14 points on 4-of-16. The hashtag more shots than points is something you do not want to fall victim to, and Jalen Green certainly did in that one against his old buddy Jonathan Kuminga. Again, this was the Jonathan Kuminga game. 13-of-22 from the field, 3-of-6 from 3, 4-of-6 from the foul line for his 33 points, a new career high, and he got his career high on basically the game ceiling bucket to make it 99-93, as he played 33 minutes in this game and kind of ushered in the quote-unquote Jonathan Kuminga era. Now, he's obviously started plenty of times in his career before Thursday and before starting over Draymond Green on Friday. But his play, a big reason why. Andrew Wiggins' play, a big reason why that Golden State was able to defeat the Rockets. Andrew Wiggins was great in this game. 23 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, a couple of steals, and a block. He is questionable, again, for this game on Wednesday. And Wiggins missing the game with a right ankle impingement on Sunday. He got injured in the second half of the first game against Minnesota on Friday. But eventually, the Rockets are going to win. Not sure if Wiggins is going to play or not, but if he's out there, Kuminga and Wiggins, again, going to be kind of the recipe for success. You've heard Gary St. Jean on this show over the last couple of years. He'll tell you, the key to Warriors' success is getting big games from Andrew Wiggins and Jonathan Kuminga. They combined for 56 points against the Houston Rockets last Thursday. They won the game by 6. Now, let's get into the ramifications of this game. So with a win, of course, that means the Golden State Warriors are on the NBA Cup semifinals in Las Vegas against the winner of Dallas and Oklahoma City. Dallas and Oklahoma City, they're going to be tipping off pretty shortly here within the next couple of minutes or so. Actually, they've already started. Dallas is up 8-0. That's insurmountable. So, look, we'll see. They'll play the winner of that game in Vegas if the Warriors win. If they lose this game tomorrow to Houston, the Warriors get a home game December 15th against the loser of the Mavericks and Thunder game. So it's going to be a tough game no matter what. You're going up against the cream of the crop. In the NBA Cup quarterfinals on the Western Conference side of things, they are overall seeds in the West currently 1-3, 4-5 with the Mavericks, Thunder, Rockets, and Warriors. The Warriors being the 5 seed in the West right now. And in the East, it's a little more drawn out because the Bucks got on a heater in their Cup tournament games. And so they're... I think Milwaukee's the 7 seed. No, they're the 6. So it's 3, 4, 6, and 7 because the Atlanta Hawks made it as well. So not quite as top-heavy in the Eastern Conference. But again, so you might have an extra home game for the Warriors. That would be next Sunday, so December 15th. If they lose, they host the loser of Dallas and Oklahoma City on the 15th. If they win, they are in Sin City for at least one game and perhaps two. The NBA Cup Championship game will be on December 17th, 5:30 p.m. So that is next Tuesday. And the game times are 1:30 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. on Saturday for the semifinals. So that's kind of what's on the line for Golden State. I'm getting out my hot take cannon right now. I'm loading it up. I'm lighting a fire to the little string that, you know, kind of sizzles down and then it goes into the boom part of the cannon and shoots it off. I think it was more important for Golden State to beat Houston last Thursday than it is to beat them on Wednesday. If I was given a choice from the big rebounder in the sky, he came down to me in a night vision and he asked, Kevin, the Warriors are going to split these two games against the Rockets. I'm going to let you pick which one they win. And I would have told the big rebounder in the sky, it's more important that they won last Thursday. I say that because you don't want to get into a 6-game losing streak. And then that carries over. That becomes a 7-game losing streak because they lose the next game. And all of a sudden, you're looking at being with 2 games above 500 after a 12-3 start. And look, I know it's great. I'd love to see all these guys get an extra 500 gur in their pockets. But to stabilize the season, I think it was much more important for the Warriors to get the game on Thursday. Now, obviously, it'd be even better if they win both of these games against the Houston Rockets. Then you're staring at 15-9. You've won 3 out of 4, and you get a free trip to Las Vegas. Not that a trip to Las Vegas is going to be a financial strain on anybody on the Golden State Warriors who's in the lineup, but I think it was more important to stabilize the season on Thursday. And if I had the choice, win the game on Thursday and have to lose the game on Wednesday, have to lose the game on Wednesday. But obviously that's not going through their minds right now. But I think it was more important to win that game last week so you snap the skid. And then, of course, then you're playing Minnesota the next night. That becomes 7 in a row. And 13-9 feels a lot different than 12-10 and so on and so forth. So this Milwaukee-Orlando game is still going on. The last 10 seconds. Literally, there was 10 seconds ago when I sent it to break at 6:28. And there were 2.2 seconds ago, 14 minutes later, there was one long review, some free throws. And I think finally this game's about to end. Damian Lillard just hit a couple of freebies. Yeah, Orlando's got to go the length of the court, down 5 with 2 seconds to go. Yes. All right, so the Milwaukee Bucks are officially on to the semifinals. They lost in the quarterfinals last year. So now they are on to the semis. They will take on the winner of the Atlanta Hawks and the New York Knicks. And the Orlando Magic was going to be my pick out of the East to make it to the finals of the NBA Cup until Franz Wagner got hurt. An oblique strain, an oblique injury, an oblique tear, I should say. The same injury that Paolo Banchero got. It's not often that you hear your two best players go down with an oblique tear. And so that really hurts because this team had really stabilized things, the Orlando Magic. They got to 3-6 after they really struggled the first couple of games with Banchero out. Then they went 14-3 in their next 17 until losing tonight. Now, they still have very capable players, but losing both Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero, I think Paolo's nearing a return. Franz is going to be out for a few weeks now, unfortunately. He had been balling. He had been really playing well for the Orlando Magic. Had that great step-back three to beat the L.A. Lakers a couple of weeks ago. And had just really been playing well. They've been winning some clutch games. Goga Batadze has been kind of a revelation these last couple of games. Had like a 2015 double-double points rebounds. Recently, he had another double-double tonight. I like this Orlando Magic team. And when they get both Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero back, I think this team's going to be a major player in the Eastern Conference. Philadelphia is starting to kind of cauterize the wound a little bit. And despite their horrendous start, they are even in the loss column with teams who are in play-in positioning in the Eastern Conference at 7-15. They are only a game and a half out of ninth. That is just the Eastern Conference for you this year. But I think that Orlando has some real staying power. Of course, they lost in the first round, 7-game series against Cleveland last year, which quite honestly was not a very entertaining series. Game 5 was awesome in that series. Games 5 and 6 were pretty good. The rest of the series was not that great. But Cleveland and Orlando didn't get much of a chance from the media to start the season as being teams that could make the Eastern Conference Finals. I think one of those two teams is going to show up in the Eastern Conference Finals this year. I mean, that's obviously not going out on that big of a limb with the Cleveland Cavaliers starting the season 15-0 and being 21-4 right now. Boston's going to be there. They have been fantastic this year. But I think either Cleveland or Orlando could potentially meet them there if things play out the way they continue to. Now, the Knicks are going to have a say. Knicks and Atlanta, they're the other cup quarterfinal game, and it's a return of Trae Young to MSG. Of course, the 2021 playoff series when he eventually led the Hawks to the Eastern Conference Finals, that surprise appearance, and took Milwaukee to 6 games in the East Finals that year. He had some memorable performances in the Garden as he closed the casket on the Knicks' 2021 playoff run in the first round. I think it was a 4-1 series. So they're going to meet. That's going to be an interesting game. That's the game that precedes Golden State Houston tomorrow. That will be a fun one for sure. I like the Knicks in that one. The Knicks are really starting to figure it out. Karl Anthony Towns has been really, really playing well for the Knicks this year. They've won 7 of their last 10. They're 15-9 now. They are now just a half game back of Orlando for third after the Magic's loss today to the Milwaukee Bucks. So I do think that Milwaukee is going to beat whoever comes out of the Knicks-Atlanta game on that side of the bracket. Milwaukee's playing really well right now. They're 13-11. They've got this thing, I'm not going to say figured out, but they're looking like a team that could at least make the second round. Of course, the asterisk, if they are fully healthy, because they have not been the last couple of playoff runs. Giannis has been banged up the last two playoffs. Middleton's been banged up. But if they have at least Giannis and Dame healthy for the playoffs and you can get 20 minutes out of Middleton, I think this is a Milwaukee Bucks team that could certainly make a push to get out of the first round and maybe a little bit more. I wouldn't expect them to get past the second round, but I think they are good to make the NBA Cup Finals for sure. I'm going to take them over the Knicks, even though I think the Knicks beat the Hawks. On the Western Conference side of things, it's going to be a tough road to hoe for Golden State. You have to play in Houston. I know they beat the Rockets 15 times in a row, but I guarantee you Ime Udoka has brought that up for sure to this team, because the Houston Rockets, they know exactly what that losing streak is at, and they would like nothing better to do than to end the skid and get to the NBA Cup semifinals themselves. That Oklahoma City-Dallas game that's going on right now, That's a very intriguing one. They had a great six-game series in the Western Conference semifinals last year. Right now, the Thunder lead that 15-11. Klay Thompson, our buddy, has already hit a three in this game. He's coming off a 20-point performance. He's had some ups and downs. He missed a little bit of time with a nagging injury, but he is starting. He's hit a three in this game, and the Mavericks and Thunder looking to play for the right to go to Las Vegas. It'll be a different NBA Cup Finals this year. It'll be a different, completely different semifinals this year. The four teams in Vegas last year were the Pelicans and the Lakers. Of course, the Lakers beat them by like 40 or something like that. And then the Pacers beat the Celtics in the other semifinal, if I remember correctly. And none of those teams are remaining. So we're going to get a completely brand new Final Four, the NBA Cup in Las Vegas this year. It'll be very interesting to see how that plays out. So that's what's coming up for Golden State. Looking beyond that, as we pull up the Golden State Warriors schedule, it's not getting easier. They're still kind of really in the thick of this tough part of the schedule, because it's either going to be the Thunder or Mavericks on the 14th or 15th in either the semifinals or that extra home game. Then if they win in the semifinals, they have a game that does not count towards the regular season record in the NBA Cup Finals. So that NBA Cup Finals game is an 83rd game that does not count towards the regular season record. It's not just for pride, it's for $500,000 for everybody on the winning team. But that game will not affect their standing in the Western Conference. Then they resume regular season play after the NBA Cup at Memphis on December 19th, and the Memphis Grizzlies have been playing very well as of late. Memphis Grizzlies currently second in the West. They've won 9 of their last 10 games at 17-8, and that's not going to be an easy one for Golden State. Going to Memphis, or they're always motivated to play the Warriors. And then the Warriors go to Minnesota. It'll be their third game in a little more than 2 weeks against Minnesota. And that takes you to December 21st before they come home and take on the Pacers right before Christmas and the Lakers on Christmas. So the Lakers in a bit of a funk right now. The Pacers have had all sorts of trouble this year. But that's kind of what's coming up for the Warriors in the rest of taking us towards Christmas and beyond the NBA Cup a little bit. So they are very nearly through this gauntlet portion of the schedule, but there's still a couple of games to get, and that's why those losses to the Spurs and Nets, I still kind of think, linger over their heads as they're going into this. It's going to turn out to be like a 10-game stretch against some of the best teams in the Western Conference, and they do have a couple of wins against this in this stretch so far. They could have had a couple more, but it would have been so nice going into this stretch with a 14-3 record instead of a 12-5 record. And it easily could have been with that 18-point lead, or a 17-point lead against the Spurs, and 18-point lead against Brooklyn would have given them a little more of a buffer. And of course, we can play the what-if game all night long, and it's not going to get us anywhere. So you got about another 5 minutes if you want to hit us up, 888-957-9570 here on Warriors Roundtable. We're wrapping up the show in the next few minutes. But with our remaining time, I do want to give a Santa Cruz Warriors update to the people, because I've been asked about Quentin Post and Reese Beekman recently, a couple of their two-way guys. I'll get to them in a little bit, but here's what's going on for the Santa Cruz Warriors. They overcame a, I believe, a 15-point deficit last night to defeat Portland's G League team, the Rip City Remix, up in Oregon. They won that game 112-109. The Santa Cruz Warriors have won four of their last five games. C-Dubs are 6-5 in the tip-off tournament portion of their schedule. So how they do it in the G League is that the tip-off tournament is kind of like their in-season tournament, NBA Cup, G League Cup, if you will. And they play 14 games. And after 14 games, you play it against like this pod of seven or eight teams. It's all geographical. And then the four pod winners of the next four teams play in the quarterfinals of the Showcase Cup, the tip-off tournament this year. The winning team gets $100,000 for the team. Not each player gets $100,000. The winning team, and it's split. I think it's just for the guys who are on G League contracts, if I remember correctly. So you're splitting it kind of 10 ways because there are 10 guys on G League contracts. So each of those guys get $10,000. Well, hey, when you're making $40,000 on a G League salary, it might be up to $42,000, $43,000 this year. That is a lot of money. And so the Warriors are 6-5. They have an outside chance of making the tip-off tournament quarterfinals. Everyone goes to play two games in Las Vegas, but only eight are eligible to win the 100 GER. So I've been asked about Quentin Post and Reese Beekman a little bit lately, and I've been really impressed with both of them. I'm not the biggest college basketball guy. I don't get a chance to watch a ton of it because I'm doing G League games. I'm watching Golden State games, do French League. I do women's college basketball, but I don't do a ton of men's college basketball. So I didn't know a ton about Reese Beekman. I knew who Reese Beekman was, two-time ACC Defensive Player of the Year. This guy's a killer, man. And it, like, you hear Virginia, you think defense, and you probably don't think a ton about his offense. And look, his shot has a long ways to go. Reese Beekman is not a good three-point shooter right now. He is shooting 36%, but you could tell that his shot needs work. He was a career 32% three-point shooter at Virginia. This guy's good. He gets crunch-time buckets, and he is a menace, an absolute menace on defense. He's fourth in the G League in steals. He's a really good table setter. He's sixth in the G League in assists. That was going into the last game. He's averaging 18.7 points, which is the part that was really kind of most impressive to me, because for his four-year collegiate career at Virginia, he averaged 9.5 points per game, and he bumped that up to 14 his senior year. But he knows how to get a team organized, and he could DIY, he could do it himself. He could break out his DIY kit, if you will. And he could get buckets on his own, at least at the G League level. And he's played a couple of games with Golden State. It's only been garbage time minutes. He's played 4 minutes this season or something like that for the Golden State Warriors. Has one bucket in his NBA career. But I like what I've seen from Reese Beekman down in Santa Cruz. Again, he's not going to be playing over Stephen Curry. He's not going to be playing over GP2. He's not going to be playing over the guards they're playing, the Buddy Hield. The list goes on, and especially, you know, if Moses Moody is healthy, get Andrew Wiggins back. Like, it's too crowded for Reese Beekman this year. But he's certainly someone to keep an eye on long term. He's only 23 years old and a professional rookie, and he's done a really nice job in the G League this year. And one thing I do like about him, even though the shot isn't that great right now, he is making it at a 36% clip through nine games. That's not nothing. You'll take a look at a shot and be like, all right, yeah, that's something that can improve. And he's been good. Now, Quentin Post is 30% from three. That's only going to continue to go north. Quentin Post has been awesome for Golden State's G League team this year, the Santa Cruz Warriors. About 17 points and 9 rebounds, and that three-point percentage has been rising north and north. It was in the low 20s. It's up to 30% now. He just gives you a floor spacing big option. He hasn't played for Golden State this year. And look, he's not going to play over Kevon Looney or Trayce Jackson-Davis anytime soon. Probably needs some more seasoning. But he is 24 years old. And he's going to turn 25 in 2 months. I'm not saying that he's ready to take over the minutes of a Kevon Looney or Trayce Jackson-Davis, but he is someone who has kind of the seasoning to perhaps step in. He played 124 college games to step in, and we'll see if and when he does get that opportunity on a two-way contract with Golden State being their second-round draft pick. Well, we've run out of time, folks. Big thank you to Mark Grandy behind the glass for getting us rocking tonight. A big thank you to R.C. Davis on the Warriors side of things. I'm Kevin Dana. We'll talk to you next week right here on 95.7 The Game. Have a great rest of your Tuesday evening.
Thank you for joining the Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game.
Steph, left wing, three. Cha-ching!
58-41. Darvin Ham says, I want to take a timeout because this one is over.
For tickets, call 888-GSW-HOOP.
Well, you have to know these things when you're a king, you know.